You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
I got a great show lined up for you. I do want to kick off talking about the Jets. And again, if you went out to that green and white practice, 800-919-3776. I know 20,000 people were out there, which is nice. It's a nice showing, considering that, let's be honest, last season could not attend an NFL game. And not that this was a game, but it was a practice. And still excited about the opportunity and the ability, even with the Delta variant and what's going on, still an opportunity to attend games this season, which is great. But we'll dive into the Jets. We'll dive into Zach Wilson's performance. That's really what I want to talk about. And then coming your way in about 30 minutes, Ian Begley, who covers the Knicks for SNY, is going to join us. Let's talk some NBA, Nets, Knicks. I like to call it money moves that did take place this past week. Also, an NBA investigation that's going on in regard to some tampering pertaining to both Chicago and Miami. We'll dive into all that with Ian Begley. And a lot of football to talk about today. We are 2 weeks into training camp. We'll hear from Mike Clay. We'll get his fantasy football insight. Mike Tannenbaum as well. And obviously, we'll dive into some Yankees and some Mets talk. Yankees continue to win. Mets continue to lose. So nothing new there, but we will dive into that. But all right, so green and white practice happens yesterday. 20,000 people were there. It is Zach Wilson's debut at MetLife Stadium, and wah, 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 wah. Two interceptions, seven possessions, seven drives, only amounted to 3 points. Was 11 of 24 for 112 yards and only converted one first down. Now, this is not shocking to me. This is not... I'm not going to write Zach Wilson off. No knee jerk reaction here. This is exactly what I expect from this young man this season. And I said it, and I'll go back and talk about how coming out of the draft, I wanted this team to draft Mac Jones. Actually, I wanted this team to draft Kyle Pitts and then get Mac Jones a little bit later. Wow, can you imagine if the Jets would have walked away with Kyle Pitts and Mac Jones? But nonetheless, it is Zach Wilson. Here's the thing. Can't put too much into this performance. This young man is a work in progress. Unbelievable athleticism, unbelievable athletic skills, can throw the ball a mile. A lot of comparison to Patrick Mahomes. I think that was a bit much, but nonetheless, the way that you're able to, he's able to maneuver a lot of his throws. I get all that. But understand that this is a different situation. The Jets, Joe D, Robert Saleh fell in love with this young man based on his athleticism. They bring in LaFleur to help groom, grow, and eventually turn him into a top-notch quarterback in the NFL. It is not going to happen overnight. That is the difference. And this happens a lot in the NFL. General managers, coaches, they fall in love with a guy. And then they feel that they are coaches. It's not just the definition of a coach. It's not about just calling plays. Running schemes, having great clock management. A coach is supposed to coach. A coach is supposed to develop a player. And that's what's going to have to happen here with the Jets. So, I'd love to hear from Jets fans, 800-919-3776. What are your realistic expectations for Zach Wilson? I know, Ira, you're up. I'll get to your call. You'll be first up when we get back. 800-919-3776. What's your realistic expectation for this team? And granted, I know this is a small sample size. It was a green and white practice. I'm intrigued to see what happens in their first preseason game against the Giants next week. But you're talking about a Jets team that more than likely is going to have four starters that are rookies in Zach, Tucker on the offensive line, Moore as the wide receiver. And I love Michael Carter. I think the Jets getting Michael Carter in the fourth round is one of the biggest steals in this year's NFL draft. I'm more excited about the draft pick of Elijah Vera Tucker and Michael Carter more than anything else. And I think Moore is going to really surprise a lot of us with his wide receiving skills in what he's going to be able to do. And not to say that, you know, Zach Wilson, again, I'm hoping that he develops into something spectacular. Obviously, the Jets are going to have to put a lot of work into making that happen. Just not the quarterback I would have selected. But who am I? I host Sports Talk Radio. I'm not a general manager. 800-919-3776. Before we do take a break, let's listen in. This is Zach Wilson post his performance last night talking to the media.
Yeah, not great. You know, I have high expectations for myself and for this offense. And, you know, I got to lead those guys. I got to make better decisions. But, you know, that's why this isn't, you know, game one. That's why we're doing this. And I understand that. Of course, I'm going to be frustrated at myself. But, you know, I'm going to go back in the film room and you know, find out what I can learn and get better from.
Let's listen in more. This is head coach Robert Saleh after Zach's performance.
You know what? It was it's his first time in front of the fans. I mean, it was a good crowd out there. And, you know, to have the coaches off the field where he's got to go through the process of playing and play out, his coordinators in the box, his quarterback coaches on the sideline, and there's no one to turn to talk to. So to have that first experience right here and to be able to go through it all, these moments are priceless for him. You know, he had some good moments, and obviously he had some rookie moments. So it was good. It's going to be a lot of tape to learn off of for him.
And I believe that this is going to be the case year long. I really do. And you know, and I guess I want to open up the phone lines, 800-919-3776. What is a Jets fan going to feel is a successful season for the Jets? Win total right now over under 6. I say under. I think they'll be lucky if they win 4 games. But there are other things that I'm going to be looking at. It's not going to be, to me, the biggest factor for the Jets this season isn't win or losses. It's the development of a very young roster. Like I said, very, very well, 4 rookies could be starting on the offensive side of the ball. Not total, just on the offensive side of the ball. So for me, watching this Jets team this season, and I'm excited about it, is the small victories, the small wins, watching the development and the progression of Zach Wilson and see how he starts this season, and more importantly, how he ends. For me, that's what I'm going to be looking at. I just hope that Jets fans have realistic expectations. Okay? Realistic expectations. Had Stefania Bell on yesterday. She's a huge 49ers fan. She's out on the West Coast. She visited 49ers camp. I asked her about Trey Lance. I'll share with you what she said. You've got Justin Fields, who looks like he is not going to start. As I said, Andy Dalton's going to start. Justin Fields not ready to start in the NFL. But Mac Jones, different story. Mac Jones turning heads and taking the majority of the first team reps over Cam Newton. But does that mean at the end of the day that Mac Jones is going to be the better quarterback than Zach Wilson? You really can't, or Justin Fields or Trey Lance. You really can't make that type of assessment for another 3 to 5 years. 3 the earliest, 5 we will know. But I will bring you up to speed on all 4 of those rookie quarterbacks that are somewhat competing, trying to start. As we know, Zach Wilson is going to start. There's no competition here. Also, another thing I want to dive into is based on what you saw from, or what you've saw, what you've read, what we've heard from the green and white practice, how imperative is it, do you feel, that the Jets need to go out and maybe make a deal for Nick Foles, make a deal for bring in a veteran quarterback that can help with the growth process and the learning process for Zach Wilson? I think it's imperative.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Ira in Staten Island, what's up?
Hey, what's up with you? Good morning, Anita. So, we both agree, of course, on Michael Carter, an absolute steal in the 4th round. The kid's going to be a really good football player. But, you know, the elephant in the room is Zach Wilson, and that's what we're talking about. That's where we differ. But I do agree with you. I think one mistake they did make is they should have had a more experienced quarterback than Josh Johnson, you know, right entering OTAs and training camp, because in case Zach Wilson does kind of stutter in the beginning or isn't ready, you don't have to force feed him, because I've seen the Jets in the past force feed Bradley Nagel, force feed Geno Smith, and you could go on, and it doesn't work. Now, listen, I understand if their philosophy is to let them learn through mistakes and growing pains, that if they're willing to live with it, I get it. You know, maybe this coaching staff will be able to do that, and maybe he has the ability to get through it. Last night, listen, you know, I'm not going to get crazy about last night. I think what happened, because I was at camp all week, I watched him all week, and he looked a lot better than last night. But once again, you know, you played, you've been around a long time. You know, they go from practice. Now, all of a sudden, it's like a mini scrimmage. So, you know, the speed and the amp, it gets amped up a little. And I think he got caught up last night in just, once again, the speed of the NFL game. And, you know, coming from BYU, and it's just going to take time for him to adjust. And we'll see what type of success he has. Like you said, I'm not concerned about the wins, whether it's 5, whether it's 7, whether it's 6. It doesn't matter to me as long as they show progress. And I do believe in the solid Douglas team. I think they're both on the same page. And I think really this is all about next year, another big draft class, another big free agent class. And then, you know, then you're talking a year under his belt. I think they're definitely going to be heading in the right direction.
Yeah, Ira, I think it's a really solid call. I think it's a heads up call, and I appreciate you calling in. So again, just to kind of bring you up to speed, because Zach Wilson, Mac Jones, Justin Fields, and Trey Lance, those four quarterbacks will, for the next 3 to 5 years, will be compared to one another. And again, if you listen to me, you listen to me on the weekends, you listen to me through the draft, you knew that I was bonkers with Mac Jones. So and before we get to Mac Jones, again, Stefania Bell was on with us yesterday. She was out at the 49ers camp. Everything that we're hearing is that Jimmy Garoppolo is going to start, but Kyle Shanahan is putting in, implementing certain packages for Trey Lance. And she saw firsthand, whenever he's on the field, he's making all the throws. He's spectacular. He runs the ball. Stefani even said that it's hard sometimes for the defensive players to pay attention to what they are doing with their individual defensive drills, because when Trey Lance has the ball, all they want to do is watch what he's going to do. But not ready to start. Jimmy Garoppolo is the starter. We'll see at what point in time in the season does Trey Lance then become the starter. Only time will tell. Will it be this season? We don't know. How well will the 49ers do? We don't know. But that's that situation, okay? And then you've got the situation in Chicago, where right now everything I'm hearing and what's being reported is that Andy Dalton is having a phenomenal camp. He's making all the throws. He's connecting with Allen Robinson, who's their lead wide receiver, and that Justin Fields is just not ready. So Andy Dalton more than likely is going to get the start for, not more than likely, Andy Dalton's going to start for the Bears. Again, same situation in regard to Justin Fields. How pro-ready is he? Is he ready to take over the reins eventually? Will it be at some point in time this season, now that Aaron Rodgers is back with the Green Bay Packers? How competitive can the Bears be? Of course, you've got the Minnesota Vikings there with Kirk Cousins, and they take a step up this season as well. I think they'll have a better record than last year. The Lions and the Texans are tanking this season. Let's take them off the equation. So I think a lot of when or how much do we see of Justin Fields, I think will be dictated by how well the Bears do, how competitive will they be. And let's say maybe around week 8, week 9, week 10, will they be out of the running? And it will be at that point that the Bears start integrating Justin Fields as their new era with Justin Fields begins. So that's the 49ers and Trey Lance. That's the Chicago Bears and Justin Fields. And then you've got the Jets, who probably selected the one quarterback who was the least ready to play in the NFL. Let's be honest. If Zach Wilson was not in this situation with the Jets, there's no way that he'd be starting for a team. If this team had Andy Dalton, if this team had Jimmy Garoppolo, there's no way that Zach Wilson, this team had Cam Newton. There's no way that Zach Wilson would be starting this season. So again, I just share that just to say, you know, small victories for this young man, small victories. Okay. This very well could be the best situation for him over everybody else, because he's right in the firing pan, right? Getting that experience, working with LaFleur. So we'll have an opportunity to grow and learn and develop possibly faster than Trey Lance and faster than Justin Fields. We'll see. But what's going on with Mac Jones and the Patriots? Mac Jones is outshining Cam Newton. He's getting more reps with the first team. Reports are that he's gelling with Josh McDaniels. Really, what's happening is Cam comes in, and I didn't like the offense that the Patriots ran with Cam last year anyway, even before Mac Jones. Okay, it's a read offense, and that is the offense that they have implemented with Cam Newton. With Mac Jones, it's more of your traditional offense that you saw Tom Brady play in when he was a Patriot. And I would imagine that this must be very difficult for Cam. You know, he's watching from the sideline. Mac Jones is out there. He's shining. More reps with the first team, more success because he's calling out better protections. His timing's better. His rhythm is better. And the biggest thing with Mac Jones coming out this year was accuracy. Now, does it mean that Mac Jones is going to start this season? Possibly. Don't know. You know, Bill Belichick has come out and said that Cam is their starter. But as of right now, Mac Jones has had the most success so far out of all four quarterbacks. Does it mean in the next 3 to 5 years he will be the best quarterback out of the four? We don't know that. And I'll go back to when I was screaming at the mountaintops, Lamar Jackson, Lamar Jackson, Lamar Jackson. I felt Lamar Jackson was the best quarterback coming out of his draft class. But I'll go back to, it's not just Lamar Jackson, what he brought to the program. It's the fact that he went to the Baltimore Ravens, and the Ravens, even though they had Joe Flacco, were able to implement a system that accentuated what Lamar Jackson brings to the table. And this is what you're seeing as well with Mac Jones. So it's not just that I felt Mac Jones was the second best quarterback in this draft class. It's that he was fortunate. First of all, the Patriots were fortunate that he dropped to them, which forever and a day is just ridiculous to me. But also, he went to the Patriots where their system and what Josh McDaniels runs and has run with Tom Brady forever and a day fits Mac Jones to a T. So it's the perfect union of what Mac Jones does well and integrating him into a system that we saw Tom Brady excel in for several years. So I believe that from the jump, from the go, we're going to see Mac Jones have a lot more success than Zach Wilson, a lot more success than Trey Lance, a lot more success than Justin Fields. But you got to give it at least 3 years. You got to give it at least 3 years to see how do the Jets develop Zach Wilson? At what point in time does Trey Lance get in? At what point in time does Justin Fields get in? What is the offensive scheme that these organizations are putting around them? Who is the talent that these organizations are putting? And I put my money on the Patriots, putting Mac Jones, building the talent around him, building a system that best accentuates his talent and his ability. So it's the perfect union. And so it's really going to be interesting to see how this unfolds in the next 3 years. 800-919-3776. Let's go to Sal. Sal, welcome in.
Hello. Hello, Anita. Thank you for taking my call. Listen, real quick on the Jets. I know Zach Wilson's going to be successful this year by the way he's throwing the ball. You know, I know the Jets and Giants are playing together next Saturday. I know one team's going to win. But I'm going with the Jets so far because, you know, I believe Zach Wilson's going to be successful. You know, Robert Saleh is a new head coach. I think he's going to be good this year. What would be your expectations for Zach Wilson coming into this 2021 season? Thank you for taking my call, Anita.
Yeah, I mean, Sal, I've just been talking about it for a good 30 minutes. I want to see growth. I want to see growth. I want to see, you know, how does he start week one? What is his completion percentage? Lack of turnovers, lack of interceptions, not force the ball into certain areas that he shouldn't be throwing to. When he does turn the ball over, when he does have a negative play, how does he respond? Does he put it behind him? Is he able to come out the next series and do something successful? Is he able to move the chains? you know, and I think, again, it's going to be a work in progress. And so I think at the end of the season, you take week one, you look at that game, and then you take, you know, the last few games of the season, and you want to see those numbers improve. And to me, that's how I'm going to be grading out Zach Wilson. On top of that, you know, I don't think he's got the most amazing talent around him. And as Ira called in not too long ago and said, you know, this is a work in progress. The Jets, they're going to have a lot of draft picks next year. They're going to have a lot of money in free agency. And, you know, his supporting cast around him, from the offensive line to the wide receivers to running backs, is going to be even better next year. And that's going to be, and that's key as well, is having a great supporting cast. You know, look what the Patriots did for Mac Jones. Aguilar. Who else did they bring in? They brought in Aguilar. I'm trying to think the other wide receivers that they brought in. The two tight ends, Hunter Henry and Janu Smith. He has a plethora of running backs back there. In fact, there's talk and speculation that Sony Michel very well is going to be traded to the Rams for a fifth-round pick. That's a possibility because, as we know, the Rams, they lost Cam Akers. So, top 10 offensive line that Mac Jones can play behind. I mean, there's that to analyze as well and make part of the equation in regard to your realistic expectations for Zach Wilson this season.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
We got Ian Begley, covers the Knicks for SNY, joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. Ian, good morning. How you doing?
Anita, I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. Let's get right into it. Julius Randle, 4-year, $117 million extension. Your thoughts?
Good for the Knicks. Because I think even if Randle, let's say he slides back and he's like 85% of the player next year that he was last year, to me, that's still a very good contract for the Knicks. And, you know, he could have waited, could have been an unrestricted free agent next summer, could have been up for a $200 million deal. So it also, and that's the Knicks the money, giving them some flexibility in the future. And if you're Randle, maybe you're looking at like a Victor Oladipo and what happened there, and you're saying to yourself, you know, this is in front of me. Let me sign this now and not risk whatever might or might not happen over the next year and get into unrestricted free agency.
Tale of two stories, right? Regular season for Julius Randle, dreadful postseason against Atlanta with the additions, Kemba Walker, Fournier. Do you think this changes things? I do expect the Knicks to be competitive next year. I do expect them to make a good run to try to make it into the postseason, hopefully a different result for Julius Randle. But the additions that they've brought in, do you think it makes it a little bit easier for him not being the guy who has to really carry the load?
I think you're right, Anita. I think offensively, you know, you have some more shot creators. Certainly Fournier can knock down the perimeter shot. So I think offensively, you're not going to have to rely on Julius Randle to give you so much night in and night out. I just wonder defensively, is there going to be a backslide? Like, because Reggie Bullock was so important for that Knicks defense last year. Evan Fournier, in recent history, is not the defender that Bullock has been. And then Kemba Walker for Elfrid Payton. So I think you will certainly improve on offense if we're going by, you know, the last couple of years, what these players have done. But I just wonder defensively if you're going to take a hit. And the rest of the East, a lot of teams in the East, I should say, have improved. So I think the Knicks could have a good season and still backslide a little bit and not finish, you know, in fourth place and have a lower winning percentage, but still have a solid season.
What about Damian Lillard? I know that that's been a name that has been thrown out there. You know, what do you think happens with him in regard to Portland? And is there, do you think there's the possibility or the opportunity that the Knicks could trade for him in the season?
You know, a lot of people that I trust around the league think it's a matter of when and not if on a Damian Lillard trade request. And it makes sense given what we've heard from Lillard recently. Seems to be kind of laying the groundwork there, but no one kind of thinks anything will happen until at the earliest right before the season, and more likely probably during the season. And so if you're the Knicks, you know, I think you look at Golden State and you look at Philadelphia, two other teams that should be, you know, in these conversations for top disgruntled stars. To me, their trade packages, on paper at least, look a lot better than what the Knicks can offer, just in terms of players who you'd be getting back in the deal. You know, Philly, you're talking about Ben Simmons probably, Tyrese Maxey, and then for Golden State, you're talking about James Wiseman, the number two pick from last year. And so I think that the Knicks, the best case scenario for them is either Golden State or Philadelphia makes a deal before Lillard becomes available, and then their trade, they maybe move to near the front of the line when you're talking about attractive trade packages.
Is everybody available in that trade, Ian?
Yeah, I think it would be my sense, at least in the earlier this offseason, my sense was it would be whatever it takes. And
whatever
then, you know, you
whatever
figure
it takes.
Out the rest of the roster. Yeah.
Again, Ian Begley joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. Before we let you go, let's turn our attention to what's going on with the Nets. KD, 4-year, $198 million. Boy, he planted his foot into Brooklyn. He's going to be here for a while. Extensions expected for Kyrie and Harden. I don't like that they left, that they lost Jeff, excuse me, that they lost Jeff Green. That doesn't sit well with me. But Patty Mills, obviously, he's now on this team. What are your thoughts about the Nets and the significance that KD now has said, listen, I'm going to be here for the long haul?
Yeah, to me, it's big time because, you know, going into this offseason, he had a player option after this coming year, and so did Harden, and so did Irving. And so that would have been, like, something that was kind of hovering over this team to me all season. Is, you know, what happens if they don't win at all and these guys have their player options? Now that that's not the case with Kevin Durant, it takes the air out of that uncertainty. And, you know, I think at the very least, we don't know what's going to happen with James Harden and Kyrie Irving, but at the very least, you would assume that those guys are going to play out their current contracts, which means the next two seasons. So these three are here, and these three, to me, before Kyrie Irving got hurt, before James Harden got hurt, they looked like the best team in the East. So assuming these three are healthy, they should be right there with the Milwaukee's and the Boston's and the Philadelphia's for a trip to the NBA Finals. And so Durant taking away that uncertainty, as you said, planting his flag here in Brooklyn was big time for him and for the franchise.
Yeah, 2-1. Nets are still favored with all the money moves that took place, even Russell Westbrook heading out to join the Lakers. Nets are still favored 2-1 to win the championship next year. Before I let you go, bring us up to speed on the NBA investigation with both Miami and Chicago. What do you think's going to happen there?
Well, it's interesting because there was a lot of speculation leading into free agency about the NBA. Just kind of, they were, people I talked to thought that the NBA was just going to pick one or two teams and do an audit and try to see what they could find just as a way to deter the whole league from, you know, tampering or communicating prior to the free agency period. So I thought something was coming. I didn't know who it was going to be, but it's with the sign and trade, it's there, you know, you almost have to have these clandestine conversations. So I think if the league wants to find something, it will find something. So I would assume that maybe you're talking about draft picks or a fine that a team would have to give up if the league does find something. But people thought some kind of investigation, somebody was going to get audited after this offseason just because they wanted to kind of crack down on the tampering. And then here we are. We'll see what happens with Miami, Toronto, and we'll see what happens with the other transaction. And I'm sure we'll get picks or money. One of these teams is going to be finding picks or money at the end of the day.
Ian, thank you so much. Why don't you let our listeners know how can they find you? Where can they see your work on SNY?
Yeah, well, check me out on Twitter at Ian Begley and SNY.TV. And we got a weekly show called The Putback about the Knicks, the Nets, and the NBA. We're going to do our season finale Monday, 4 p.m. live. We'll have your friends, Anita, Bobby Marks, no relation, to break down things. So on Monday, so come check us out.
I know so many people think that we're related because of the hair, but I know that throws people off. Anyway, Ian, thank you so much. Always appreciate your time, my friend. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday fun day.
You as well, Anita. Always good to be with you. Take care.
You got it. You got it. So the NBA, again, is investigating tampering with Lonzo Ball going to Chicago, in Lowry going to Miami. Illegal contact. Now, here's what could be at stake for both these franchises. $10 million fine, suspension of team executives, removal of draft picks, and they very well could void these contracts. So, and you know, a lot of people feel the move with Lowry to Miami and the Heat, along with of course Jimmy Butler and that crew, kind of elevates Miami to really have a solid shot of competing and contending. So the Lowry investigation, to me, more significant than Ball, but we'll see how it plays out.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Again, we just had Ian Begley on and thought it was interesting. And Ty, I'd love to get your thoughts on this because you and I have had this conversation before. You know, there was talk and speculation maybe Chris Paul would come here. Of course, that did not happen. He's returning to Phoenix. I understand why. They're going to try to run it back and maybe win it. As we know, two games shy of winning a championship, probably feels that Father Time is not on his side, and Phoenix and that roster and Devin Booker and Ayton, that's the best opportunity and chance for him to win a championship before his ship sails. But I thought it was interesting. Ian Begley, trust his judgment, trust his reporting, said that everything he's hearing is that the Damian Lillard trade to the Knicks isn't a matter of if, it's a matter of when. And that
he said that the trade request, not that it's necessarily going to come to the Knicks, just him requesting a trade. I don't know that he meant.
My question was, how likely is it that he comes to the Knicks? And
he was talking about just him requesting a trade.
Got it.
Yeah, not that it's specifically going to be the Knicks, because he also offered that the Sixers and the Warriors would have better packages to offer as far as, you know, the players are concerned. Like, yeah, the Knicks have draft capital, but as far as impact players, you can dole out blue chippers. The Sixers and the Warriors, if they were to engage with the Blazers, they would have better packages to offer.
Yeah, because the Sixers, I guess we're anticipating that Ben Simmons will not be a part of that roster next year. But at the same time, the reports out of Ben Simmons and his lack of you know, work ethic, do you really want Ben Simmons on your team?
Yeah, but maybe that's maybe that's just his way of, you know, trying to get out of Philly. It's a terrible sign. You don't want a player to just be completely tapped out, even if you are looking for a better situation. This is not the way you want to behave, this is not the way you want your players to behave. But yeah, maybe going to a completely, you know, new fresh organization, getting a fresh start would be the way to go for him.
Yeah, I've never been a huge Ben Simmons fan myself, so we'll see how that plays out. But so more importantly, though, the fact that Ian said if it is an opportunity for Lillard to work out a deal with the Knicks, and you and I have had this discussion before, nobody's safe. Everybody's available. Listen, I love Damian. I think he's one of the most underestimated players in the NBA. I don't know why he's not discussed in the same circles as a lot of the, as I like to call them, alpha players in the NBA. I don't know. Is it because he's in Portland? Is it that the games are on late at night? I don't know, but like I loved, I won so much money with Damian Lillard this past year, over points, over triple doubles, over assists, over rebounds. Like the dude just delivers night in and night out. It's not, here's the thing, Ty, dude never takes a night off. Like he brings it each and every night. He brings his A game.
He takes nights off in the second round, the third round, and the fourth round of the playoffs, because his team's not getting there. That's why he's not being discussed as much as Steph Curry and Kevin Durant and LeBron James, Giannis. Like, these guys are contending for championships, and as great as Dame Leonard is, fairly or unfairly, you're going to be judged for your team's success. And the Blazers in this tenure, I believe, have only been to the Western Conference Finals once, and it was a series they got swept by the Warriors. So he hasn't won a game, you know, past the second round. That's why he's not being discussed with those other greats.
Okay, but at the same time, you know, and one thing that we know about the NBA, and this is, you know, I like to call it gaming the system. You know, you need the right supporting cast. You can be as great as LeBron James, but you know, if AD is injured and they don't have a great supporting cast, you know, LeBron James isn't making it to the postseason either. So, but here's my thing, and here's what my dilemma is.
Let's be fair. LeBron in 2018 got to the finals with Jeff Green as the second best player. But sure, everything else, sure.
But here's my point. My point is, if you're willing to give up the kitchen sink to bring in Damian Lillard, then where are you? Like right now, I know no huge superstar on this Knicks roster. I get that, but I like the base that has been created here, and this is a core and a base that got the fourth seed in the postseason. Granted, not a great performance against Atlanta, got knocked out early. But I would rather, let me preface by saying, I'd love Lillard to come here. Like, again, I am a Lillard fan. I would love Lillard to come to New York and be a Knick. But I think it's really risky if you give up the kitchen sink for him, then what do you have? You've got Lillard, and now you're in a situation that I think that your Lakers are in, right? Like, you've got a big three, but now it's kind of like, how are you going to round out this roster? I just don't know if that is the formula for success, as opposed to the Knicks not giving, protecting some guys, not giving up the kitchen sink, and making a big play in 2022 for some of the other big name.
Yeah, but the toughest thing to do is to get the star. And we've seen that across the league. In order to win a championship, historically, you need an all-time great player. Not just a great player, an all-time great player. Giannis is now an all-time great player. We see the resume, the two regular season MVPs, the finals MVP, the defensive player of the year, and the performance he just had in the finals and all throughout the postseason. He's an all-time great player. Durant, Steph, LeBron, like, these are the guys winning championships. And if you are a team that's going to contend for one, you need an all-time great player. Dame can be in that conversation. So now you figure out, once you acquire him, how do you get other players around him? Well, it starts with being attractive. Like, do other guys decide, you know, that's a place I want to go? I want to team up with Dame in New York City, Mecca of basketball. Your situation becomes more enticing when you get the all-time great player. And with all due respect to Julius Randle, I don't think anyone is asking out of their current situation because they want to demand a trade to go play with Randle. So that's where the roster construction, you know, kind of takes its shape. Once you get the player, guys want to play with that guy.
But I understand what you're saying. You know, obviously more attractive to come to New York, as you like to call it, the Mecca, and it's what it is called, the Garden. It definitely gained a lot more cred after this season. But you are taking, and I'm sure you're agreeing with me, you are taking two steps back. I understand that you're saying maybe you got to take two steps back to take three steps forward. But if you do give up the core of what at least got this Knicks team to the postseason, not even, you know, as a play-in game, but as a legit host of the first round, you're still taking two steps back to see, okay, now what can we do? How can we round out this roster to take three steps forward? So, you know, it's risky. I mean, listen, it's risky.
Yeah, but you just gotta trust your brass. You gotta trust the foundation of your organization. Because it's interesting. Like, people who are anti trading for Lillard, they'll contend, well, you don't want to do what you did when you traded for Melo, as if the Melo trade was a bad one. It wasn't a bad trade. Let's not, you know, have revisionist history. The trade was the right move to make. It's just that, unfortunately, Stoudemire gets hurt, Melo gets hurt, and the Knicks never found a way to build the roster around those guys. So that's the task. Once you get the great player, you're hoping he's attractive enough for you to go find other great players who want to come here, maybe take less money, sign in free agency, and what have you. But what we know is that as fun as the Knicks were last year, they're not going to be the four seed this season. That the East got better. The Bucks, the Sixers, the Nets, the Heat, are they better than any of those four teams? No.
I mean, but listen, you could say that, but look at all the injuries we saw happen this year.
That's the thing. I mean, right. Injuries, obviously, that's the most significant variable that we can't
but
really
yet,
account for.
But here's the thing. But here's the
healthy,
thing.
I'm saying. Are they
but here's the thing, Ty. That team? But again, that plays into if you're going to give up a lot, then you don't have depth. And it is a long season. And what we've seen this year is that there's a lot of injuries.
Well, look.
So that's another thing. That's another thing that you're
But here's the
you're
thing.
Compromising.
If your best players get hurt, you're not going anywhere anyway, depth or not. If Giannis gets hurt, the Bucks are done. Like there's some like the Nets are in a situation that's unique, and that you have Harden, Durant, and Irving, three of the top 12 players in the league. That's not depth. That's an oversaturation of riches. Like you're very fortunate to be that team, but. If Anthony Davis or LeBron James, they get hurt, like the Lakers are done. So any team that loses their best player, they're going to be significantly compromised.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN. This is Click.
Click. Click. Click.
Or don't. Click. Click. Very simply, here's the headline. Are you interested in clicking or not?
All right, fun way we take our tour around our wide, wide world of sport and find out what is trending at 11:46 a.m. on this Sunday morning. Ty is producing the show. He will lead the way. Sir Ty, what do you have for us?
All right, so you just mentioned the tough news for the Yankees with Anthony Rizzo testing positive for COVID. And you outlined all of the ramifications surrounding that. But as far as the game is concerned, here's your chance for the team to complete a four-game series sweep of the Seattle Mariners since July 6th, Anita. Your New York Yankees, I know you're a big Yankee fan, are 19-8. That's the best record in baseball over that span. They trail the Rays by just five games in the division. That's Red Sox and the A's lead the Yankees in the wild card for both 1-2 by just one game in the loss column. So we've come a long, long way. The Yankees now, after last night's, or yesterday afternoon, I should say, 5-4 victory, now 39 wins in games decided by one or two runs. That's the most in baseball. So the team is clicking right now on all cylinders. Here's an opportunity to go for the sweep. And what do you know? Just a couple weeks ago, we called this team dead, and here they are now, still right in the thick of things as they look to compete for a World Series.
Yeah, it's really unbelievable. And again, very very sad news in regard to Anthony Rizzo, and we're hoping him a speedy and full recovery. That he's contracted COVID-19. Chapman yesterday, news that he's put on the 10-day IL because of elbow inflammation. Hopefully he gets back in action. Obviously those two gentlemen are going to be needed for this Yankees run and for them to realistically, Ty, get the wild card spot. I think it's kind of unrealistic to believe that they are going to surpass either Boston or the Rays. Maybe Boston.
Yeah, Boston.
I just think
they're only a game behind
right.
Boston.
Right. I think the Rays win the division, but I feel really confident based on what I've seen this last month that the Yankees will get in as the wild card.
Well, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No. I feel good. I feel confident. I felt confident a week ago when people were telling me slow your roll, cautiously optimistic. Now, I'm not predicting that the Yankees win the World Series. That's not what I'm saying. But I do believe more than ever, they'll make it into the postseason. I think they'll make some noise in the postseason. How far they go, only time will tell.
Speaking of time will tell, I mean, the time is running out for the other team in town, the New York Mets, who staged a fake rally last night in the ninth inning. They scored three runs, thought that things could get interesting in a game that they trailed 5-0 entering the inning. But they did fall 5-3 to the Phillies, who have now won seven straight games. It's their longest winning streak since 2012. They now lead the Mets by a game and a half in that National League East division. Coming into Friday night, the Mets were in first place for 90 consecutive days. They are now staring at third place because the Braves lost yesterday. But if the Mets lose today and the Braves win, the Mets would be in third place. They're only a game ahead of the third place Braves. So they've lost 6 of 7 games, 8 of 10 games. They're 20-27 since June 19th. They're 4 games below 500 in that bad division. Not looking good for the Amazings over there in Flushing.
No. And, you know, I know so much emphasis, by the way, is being placed on Jacob deGrom. And once Jacob deGrom gets back and once he's healthy, the Mets will turn it around. I don't see that. Tread water until Jacob deGrom gets back. I don't even know if they could do that, Ty. I mean, this lineup is underproducing. 20 runs in their last 8 losses. That's it. That's all they've been able to manufacture.
Only one team, and that's the Pittsburgh Pirates, have scored fewer runs this season than the Mets. And that's a lineup that, yes, you take a hit when you lose Lindor, but you still have Alonso, you still have McNeil, you still have Conforto, Nimmo. You should be scoring more runs. You should be scoring more runs consistently.
Absolutely. So, you know, I know a lot of Mets fans are putting a lot of eggs in that Jacob deGrom basket. But there's more things wrong with this Mets team than just Jacob deGrom being on the IL until September. And, you know, I don't know if it's that this team is trying too hard. They're paying too much attention to the standings. They know that the Phillies and the Braves are on their coattails. Well, no longer. Now they're no longer number one in the National League East. Yeah. But I don't know if it's a mental thing. I don't know if it's a clubhouse thing. Whatever the case may be. But this Mets team, they're heading in the wrong direction. And there are other things that need to get right than just Jacob deGrom being back on the bump.
Yeah, and speaking of that, Luis Rojas, the manager of the Mets, was asked after the game if he's worried about his job security.
No, I can't. I would never do that. This is, for me, and I will say it again, I said this in the past. My focus will always be on the team, and nothing more than that. I mean, we gotta win games. And if my focus is not there, I'm disrespecting everybody that's wearing this uniform. That's it. There's nothing more than that. So my focus is here. My focus is to what I need to do. I gotta get ready to help the guys for the game tomorrow. You know, facing Zach Wheeler, one of the best pitchers in the National League. So we gotta put together a lineup, and we gotta come in and we gotta win. You guys know it better than I do. We got to win. We got to win tomorrow.
Now, what makes this so devastating, so frustrating, so infuriating is that it's a division that is, you could argue, the worst in baseball. The Nationals just sold everyone. Soto's now hurt. He's the only, like, remaining guy on the team. Scherzer and Trey Turner are gone. The Marlins are barely a baseball team. The Braves lost their best player. And the Phillies, who, as I mentioned, have won, what, 12 straight games? I'm sorry, 7 straight games, the longest winning streak since 2012. They improved at the deadline, but it's still a flawed baseball team. So the Mets, with a 5-game lead on June 26th, not insurmountable, but you felt good about where they were, considering everything happening around them, and they've just completely fallen apart. As I mentioned, since June 19th, they're 20-27.
Yeah, you know, the Phillies, though, their last 10 games, 8-2, and I like what they did at the trade deadline, though, Ty. I like that they went out and they got Kyle Gibson, and I like that they got Ian Kennedy. Ian Kennedy,
he's improved big, that bullpen. That bullpen was shaking.
Yep,
and he gives them some legitimacy.
And he got his 17th save yesterday, and that was a Mets team. They were feeling it. They were in a groove. They were in a vibe in that ninth inning, and unfortunately 2 runs short, but to tie, possibly taking into over innings. But anyway, I like what the Phillies did at the trade deadline. Now, I shared yesterday, if you recall, there's an analytics division.
The simulator.
The simulator that simulated like over 100 simulations in regard to how the season is going to play out. And they have Atlanta. They have Atlanta winning this division. So... not even the Phillies. They
Atlanta's
have Atlanta
in third place right now, so they're a game behind the Mets, and what, 2.5 games behind the Phillies.
So we'll see what happens. I'm assuming that you're going to talk about Bobby Bowden. That's definitely something that's been trending.
Oh yeah, R.I.P. That's devastating news. We learned that legendary Florida State football coach Bobby Bowden dies at the age of 91. He's second all time in Division I wins. The school announced this morning that he passed away. So very, very sad news. We send our thoughts and prayers to the family.
So as you know, born and raised in Miami, my dad played for the University of Miami. So I knew Bobby extremely well. When I got into the business, I was interning for a CBS TV station in Miami, and got to know, covered obviously the Canes and the Seminoles, is, you know, and the Gators as well. And so I played golf with Bobby over a dozen times, and one of the nicest men, just so nice and so kind. The one thing I could say about Bobby, what was great about him was, you know, there's quite a few people that I have come into contact in my life. Mike Tirico is another, in that you sit down, you have a conversation with them, and, you know, you sit down and you want to hear all about them because they're intriguing people and they've had a lot of success in life. But somehow, some way, they turn the conversation around and it becomes about you, and you don't. That's, you know, you can't wait to hear about them. You can't wait to ask them all the questions you've been dying to ask them. But yet they turn the conversation where it's more important for them to find out more about you than it is about them. And the two people who stand out to me who do that so extremely well was Bobby Bowden, and the other guy is Mike Tirico, who does that as well. He, you know, even though, you know, these two guys walk into a room and they very well might be the two most important people in the room, but they turn around and they make you feel like you're the most important person in the room. I think it's a knack. I think it's a talent. And I think it's a big piece of humility, and Bobby Bowden did have that. So Godspeed, rest in peace. And I feel blessed that I knew the man. And I feel blessed that I had an opportunity. The times that I did spend with him, we were on the golf course because we played in a lot of celebrity golf tournaments together down in Florida. So heavy heart this morning in regard to Bobby Bowden and that family. I know we've got about less than a minute left in the show. Any final thoughts before we sign off, Ty?
I know you mentioned Zach Rosen. He did not perform well, so let's hear from him real quick on his performance.
Yeah, not great. You know, I have high expectations for myself and for this offense, and, you know, I got to lead those guys. I got to make better decisions, but, you know, that's why this isn't, you know, game one. That's why we're doing this, and I understand that. Of course, I'm going to be frustrated at myself, but, you know, I'm going to go back in the film room and, you know, find out what I can learn and get better from.
That's from the green and white practice. He went 11 of 24, 112 yards, threw a couple of interceptions. But the Jets are going to go 17-0 this year, so I'm not concerned.
Spoken like a true Jets fan. Ty, great job today. I know you're rolling solo back there, and it was a lot of moving parts, and I appreciate you, my friend. Great job.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.